Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why X and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode. On this episode, my guest is Bertrand Ebert, and we are going to discuss one of Bertrand's specialties, his friend, Rick Martel. We're going to discuss all about Rick's career, just then talk about Bertrand and his association with Rick. And, of course, we're going to mention some of Bertrand's great books that you all should go out and grab. This is a great conversation about an absolutely great and underappreciated wrestler in Rick Martel. We chose this topic, number one, because I've been wanting to talk to Bertrand for a long time. And because, number two, as of the day of the release of this, it is Rick's birthday. So, happy birthday, Rick Martel. And I thought, well, this is a prime time to celebrate and discuss his career, something that I very much enjoyed doing because I have always been a huge fan of Rick Martel. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I'll have that interview with Bertrand. So stick around.
Phil Center Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilSingerGames.com to order now.
If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two, and Screams.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time, joining me is the author of incredible books about Andre the Giant, Mad Dog Vachon, Pat Patterson, and the history of Montreal wrestling. He's joining me today to talk about Rick Martel, who is celebrating a birthday on the day of this release of this episode, Bertrand Ebert. Bertrand, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I saw that the day this is released, which is, let's see, what is it? It would be March the 18th. That is Rick Martel's, that'll be his 61st birthday. And
70th birthday.
Yeah. And, excuse me, you're right. Yeah. And I grew up a fan of Rick Martel. I always loved Rick Martel as a kid, even pre the model days, which we'll talk all about all these things. So I wanted to talk about Martel, and
seeing as how you are what I view as the expert of Montreal wrestling, which is where Martel hails from, correct?
Yeah, I mean, he's from Quebec City, but yeah, that's the Montreal territory for everyone outside of the Quebec province.
Yeah, so I feel like you're the guy to talk to about this, short of talking to Martel himself, which that would be a dream. But
yeah, well, you know, I'm fortunate enough that I also grew up a giant mega Rick Martel fan. He was my guy. Everyone was Dino Bravo, but I was Rick Martel. He was international. He became world champion and all of that. So he was my guy. And unfortunately for me, with the release of the book, we became friends. So I'm kind of acting as his manager right now. Good. So we're going to be at the big event shortly next weekend in New York. You know, I'm filtering his information. And just the fact that Rick is calling me on my birthday, for example, is pretty amazing all in itself.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, those kinds of things, right? I've talked to people, got to know people, have people I consider friends, that if you had went back and asked, you know, whatever, 10-year-old, 13-year-old me, they would have thought it was crazy that to even suggest such a thing. It is a pretty remarkable thing.
I mean, my younger self would go banana.
Yeah.
As Pat Patterson would say.
That's right. Go banana. Talking about Rick Martel, like many others in the business, right? Martel comes from a wrestling family. So tell us about the Martel family and their importance to Montreal and that territory.
Yeah. So it's basically his brother, Mad Dog Martel, who was partnered with Frenchy Martin as the mercenaries in Puerto Rico. Who actually died in the ring, who got Rick his start. As simple as that. Rick was an amateur wrestler, very good amateur wrestler, and obviously wanted to follow in his brother's footsteps. There was a missing guy called Pat Kelly in the Maritime for a tour. They already printed the program and everything. So Pat Kelly ended up being Rick's debut in the business as he played Pat Kelly for that time period. And the rest is history. After that, his brother pushed him towards Stampede. And when he started to work around the world, he fastly became very popular everywhere he went. He was an amazing technical wrestler for the time, very flashy also for the time, not that bad or not easy on the eye, as they would say.
Sure.
So he would draw the kids, he would draw on the guys, and he would also draw with women.
Yeah.
So that made him a major player almost everywhere he went. And there was like probably, I mean, if you've seen Rick Martel matches, you've seen that match from New Zealand, I believe. Yeah. Uh-huh. His match from New Zealand with Arlie Race. And Arlie Race brought back that tape to the state. And from there, the word got around that this kid from Montreal or Quebec City was very good, and that he kept getting opportunities, and he kept hitting big hits everywhere he went, you know, from Portland to Georgia to ended up with the WWE. And obviously, I mean, that AWA run is nothing be ashamed about.
Sure.
But in our book, Mad Dog's Midgets and Screwjob, about the history of Montreal wrestling, I mean, I think my original, my partner had to cut like more than half of what I wrote about Martel, because there's so much. I don't think there's any territories where he went where he didn't first, you know, got to the main event, get championship. So he was always something in each place he went. He likes telling me the story of him and a young Stan Hansen headlining Texas for Fritz Von Erich. Fritz was the official main event was Fritz. But, you know, Fritz didn't want to go and do a big 15-20-minute match. So he would put Martel and Hansen as the last match on the card, and they would tear the house down together. Fritz would do the main event, you know, midway through or something like that. So, I mean, that's even before World Class Championship Wrestling was was coined as a word. So, I mean, he's been everywhere. He's met everybody. And he was, I mean, what I think is amazing is that, you know, it every territory it worked.
Sure. Yeah. And
there
we're going
to. No two way about it.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about some of it, some of the highlights, right? Not every single thing. But let's go back to that, right? You say in his debut, because I haven't dug deep enough to really hear this. He portrayed Pat Kelly, and this is of the Kelly twins, correct?
I don't remember if it which Kelly, and he doesn't remember either. I mean, the Pat Kelly that was printed on all the programs, and it was just the name printed everywhere, Pat Kelly, and they needed a Pat Kelly, so his brother spoke for him, and he was Pat Kelly, and that's all he got his beginning.
Yeah, and that's funny. And like you said, after that, right, he traveled everywhere in those early years. And then, like you mentioned, right, one of his first major forays into the U.S. was in the Pacific Northwest in Portland.
Yeah,
and,
I mean.
And he was very successful there. So tell us about that. So this, a lot of this came from that match. And the support of Harley Race, right?
Yeah, I mean, Harley's support, you know, brought his name around. And like today, it's always who sees you. Mm. And, you know, timing is everything. So, you know, at first he wasn't too sure because he lost that match, obviously, against Harley.
Yeah.
And people were still afraid of doing jobs and showing job. But showing that match on TV everywhere of Rick giving that great match to the champion in New Zealand, I mean, that made a big difference for him when time came to speak with promoter. And in Pacific Northwest, he became a big star, became also a good friend with Roddy Piper.
Mm-hmm.
They were roommate, and, you know, they were on the road together, as famously told in Roddy's biography. They were famously on the road when Mont Saint-Hélène blew up, when the volcano blew up in Pacific Northwest there. So it's a life of adventure everywhere he went, and of success.
Yeah. And also in these kind of these early days, early time, did Martel have a stint booking in Hawaii?
Yeah. When he worked in New Zealand and then Hawaii, he was a booker in Hawaii, which is, again, you know, completely mind-blowing that you would give the book or work the book with someone that young into the business. He would also, I mean, at some point in time in Montreal towards the end of international wrestling, also do a lot of the booking. So he was had always a good mind for the business. And for those guys back then, I mean, getting into the office and being able to book the show, was always the goal. Was always, you know, that's where the money went, you know, to the promoter. So you wanted to be on that side of the fence.
Yeah, and like you said, anywhere Martel went, he went everywhere. Worked and traveled everywhere. He was always featured prominently, featured well. A lot of that, of course, is him, right? His personality, his work, and everything else. But there's also that side of it, right? That from the get-go, Martel established himself as very reliable, right? He was going to be there. He's going to work hard. He's going to give you everything he had. And you could see that everywhere he went, right? Promoters entrusted him.
He was reliable. He was reliable. He was good. He was a man of his word to this day. So it you know, that goes a long way. And you know, when you're like that, and on top of that, you get over and you get people into the building, and you get the good people, their good matches. I mean, that's you buy yourself a lot of goodwill out of the promoter, out of the fans too. I mean, in his long absence in the past few years from doing any type of appearance, I mean, obviously as made the big event this coming weekend very sought after by Rick Martel fans everywhere.
Yeah, and this reliability, this, you know, work and everything else led to him in 80 to had his first run in the WWE, of course, the WWF at that time. And he very quickly formed a tag team with Tony Gurria. They won the tag titles on two occasions. And it seems like during this and when he comes back to WWE later, there's a he was used a lot in tag wrestling. What do you suspect was the reason behind that? Was it because a lot of people could view that maybe there wasn't faith in Martel as a singles wrestler. I always viewed it as a kind of a they used Martel to put someone else with to get them over, right? Because Tony Gurria is a great worker. Don't get me wrong. But he's not a Rick Martel.
Yeah, I think at that time, I mean, in the second run with WWE, I mean, it became so much showbiz and there was a lot of interview and he had a thick, strong French accent. I don't think they felt confident that he could pull a lot of talking and get himself over just by talking. But I mean, it was always his work that got him over. I mean, there's not a lot of great Rick Martel interview, even as the AWA world champion.
Sure.
There's a few good one in French, in Montreal, as it was much more easier for him to show the same fire in interviews in French that he showed in the ring than to do that in English. But there's a few media interview. That's also one good thing in the past. I mean, there's a few media interview out there where he comes up very good, especially as the world champion. For Vern Gagne, and you know, people maybe they don't remember. I'm old enough to remember that, but there was that time that quick time period in 85, 86, there was three world champion. It was Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, and Rick Martel. There's that famous poster.
Yep.
From Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And they were the top three guys in the business, technically.
Sure.
We all know that how the AWA territory worked today. I mean, it was not the same grind as the other two, but it was still a money-making territories up until that point in time. But I don't think, from that point forward after that, nobody has championed with Vern way of thinking and the way business was changing and evolving so fast would have made the difference to change that. But I like to think that Martel slowed that process down a little bit more at that point in time, as he was amazing. He had great matches with Michael Hayes, Jimmy Garvin, Jumbo Tsuruta, Nick Bockwinkel, which he had good matches since even before that. I mean, the whole point of Rick being world champion was Bockwinkel pushing for him to become his successor.
Yeah.
And Rick even turned down going back to WWF again and staying there longer and do something more there because they were offering him the world championship with the AWA. And so that's I think it's not a small statement in someone's career. He's very proud of that. And everywhere he went, I mean, he was a success. And that run with the AWA was a success for what the AWA was at that time, and would end up being the last glory days of the AWA.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with all that. He, a lot of people, right, in retrospect, have weird opinions of the AWA because a lot of people only think of that end of the AWA stuff.
Yeah, and 86, that's, 86 yeah. And 788.
Yeah, and that's not what you should formulate an AWA opinion on. Because
the dying days.
It was. And at one point in time, AWA was probably the promotion. Territory, I mean, square, well, I don't know what you would call it. I'm shooting a blank here. Just the absolute, if you put it on a map, the AWA was the largest territory at once upon a time. And they were playing, lots of major cities. But even when you're talking about when Martel was shipping, they were still a major force in wrestling. And because I remember, right, I was knee deep as a fan at this time. And Martel being an AWA champion was a huge deal to me. And I knew who Rick Martel was. And then when he won that, I literally thought, okay, man, he's next level now. He's the guy.
Yeah.
He is, and like you said, that poster, I thought, hey, he's right there. He belongs. And right then there was matches with him and Flair and different things at that time and lots of stuff. But yeah, he was,
that match in Japan with Flair is a classic all in itself. And, it was an amazing thinking even about it back then, that, you know, you had the AWA champion and the NWA champion together in a ring and all of that. So it's hard. I mean, there's a lot of thing now in that if you were there in 85, 86, 87, 88, your perspective is not the same as if you just read about it or seen some footage here and there. I mean, Rick Martel being the AWA champion and that being a big deal when people remember him as, you know, a challenger at times for the IC belt or a tag team wrestler, or just a WCW TV champion is maybe hard to fathom or understand, but it's the same thing. You cannot understand what it was to see a house show from WWF and having Hulk Hogan as the main event and how over he was, yeah, unless you were in those buildings back then. It's unexplainable. And the closest would be if people were there when Stone Cold hit his peak and they were like selling out everywhere and doing those big matches with The Rock at house show and all that. That's the closest. And I'm not even sure if the feeling was exactly the same, because 10 years later, the wrestling fan mentality was already changing.
Yeah,
it was not the same, but back then it was amazing. And that run with Rick, I mean, for me, they can say whatever they want. That's a huge run and it's a huge feather in his cap. And, you know, I wish more footage of it existed, actually, and they would put more feature on it. Even the AWA DVD by WWE is kind of a revisionist history about Rick title reign there. They barely mention it. And because for WWE fan, Rick was just the middle of the card and tag team wrestler. But I mean, he had been a tag team wrestler since forever. I mean, every places. I mean, he was a tag team with Piper. He was in a tag team with Tommy Rich in Georgia, where they were tag team champion. He was tag team in Montreal with Dino Bravo. We had our own Mega Power in Montreal. You know, the Mega Power, Dino Bravo and Rick Martel, you know, they feuded, then they renewed their friendship and they teamed together to defend against the big bad American. The Road Warriors were coming in fighting Bravo and Martel on top. I mean, that was for us here. I mean, it's that we call that, that's the last golden era for us. And that's when I was becoming a fan. So and like I mentioned early on, I mean, Rick was my guy. I mean, for me, that was the guy. And to see him, I mean, for us, I mean, Dino was the international champion and Rick came in and he was the AWA world champion. They were teaming together against the Road Warriors. Man, that was, I don't think you could get bigger than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And and Martel, he had a good run with it, right? He had a long run with the title.
I mean,
he dropped it. Yeah, and he dropped it to Stan Hansen in 85. And that ended up being a disaster for Vern and the AWA. That's a side story with Stan.
Yeah.
But I'm always, because you don't get, it's hard to get the straight story from a lot of people on this. What do you have any idea with talking with Rick? Maybe, I don't know, maybe you haven't talked about him, about this. What was the reason? Why did Hansen win the title from Stan? Because Vern's always been one of those, I'll give it to a guy I can trust. And Stan doesn't seem to be that guy.
I believe it was a deal with All Japan to put the belt on Stan for a tour over there. And Rick was, you know, winding down his AWA run with purchasing into the Montreal territory.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, everything seems to indicate that money wasn't as good as it was, because the business was evolving and changing at a rapid pace. And the AWA was obviously not going to keep up. And Rick and Stan went way back together. They're very good friends. So for Rick, it made sense to put Stan Hansen over. And Stan Hansen came to Montreal and put Rick over 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring in a non-title match to set up an AWA rematch in Montreal as well. Yeah. Which, I mean, do everybody do your own work, find any pinfall 1, 2, 3, 5 extension in North America in that time period. You won't find any except that one.
Yeah.
So they had a good relationship. So for them together, it worked. They were okay with returning the favor each way. And I mean, obviously for Vern, because Stan was so difficult at times, because his main bread was with Japan. Yeah. And it's always that with promoter. You have to understand that if you're doing that deal, you know, Stan is not going to make you his priorities out of the blue when his priority is Japan.
Yep, so, absolutely.
So it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I remember at the time, right? I love the Hansen-Martel match where Hansen takes title. I mean, I loved at the time on paper Hansen as champion, because I'm a Stan Hansen fan too, and I like Hansen. Obviously, right at that time as a fan, I didn't understand. I didn't know about, you know, the backstage politics and deals and associations and all that kind of stuff. Didn't know what it would become and the trouble it, you know, would kind of be for Vern and the AWA. But on paper at that time, I thought, oh, this is cool, right? Stan Hansen as AWA champion. You know, but you know, it is different. But you said, right, Martel was shifting directions, doing some different things. A couple years later in 86, he ends up returning to the WWE. And a lot of people, this is where a lot of people start remembering or start their memories, quote unquote, of Rick Martel, is this period. And he returns with Tom Zink as the K&M Connection. But what a lot of people don't remember or know is, right, that team, the K&M Connection and Martel and Zink, had actually been formed earlier in the year prior to coming to WWE, correct?
Yeah, they did team with All Japan for a short while there in hope and preparation of maybe doing that WWE run. I mean, obviously, and they actually worked with Stan Hansen too in Japan back then. That's where they first starting teaming. The run was so short. People don't remember, but I mean, they literally exploded on the WWF scene of the time.
They were huge.
They were obviously going to make them the tag champion at some point. Yes. I mean, and the only thing being at an issue, I believe, was Zink's attitude of understanding his role and his position and the fact that he was younger and all of that. And the grind of going from doing some territory work for Montreal or doing the AWA compared to doing the grind of a WWF schedule, which was at that time at the worst it will ever be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably a lot for any young guy to get. And obviously, I mean, that created issue, but I mean, the magazine were labeling them as the WWF answer to the Rock and Roll Express. And they were getting over. There's no doubt about that, and they were going to be tag team champion at some point. I mean, in Montreal, they even run a house show match on top with the K&M Connection against the British Bulldogs, babyface against babyface. So I mean, there was so many possibilities with them as a team. Zink was like Penn as a younger version of Rick. So obviously, I mean, that there was a lot. But I mean, again, when you team a young guy with a veteran, I mean, there has to be some growing pain at some point, and those growing pains, you know, ended up with Zink leaving.
I'm sorry, there was a connection, right? Because wasn't Zink dating like Martel's sister-in-law or something to that effect, correct?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
No connection in that of that nature.
Okay. Well, but it was like you said, a young guy. It was a situation, right, where Martel, it looked like, was trying to take Zink under his wing, you know, and show him, you know, show him what this is. And again, over time, in retrospect, and again, I'm not trying to bury Tom Zink or whatever, because I don't want to do that, but it has proven, right? Tom Zink had his difficulties.
Even going when he finally made it to WCW as the Z-Man, I mean, even there was apparently some difficulties and growing pains, and he never achieved more than middle of the pack and tag team with Brian Pillman. So, I mean, there there is other stories. I mean, Rick has turned the page on it, and Tom is gone, and it is what it is. Tom said what he said about Rick making more money. As far as Rick is, I've known Rick. He's always said, you know, we were making the same money. We were just starting. We were just getting there. You know, the money was not that great yet, but you know, I could see the merchandise coming. I could see the positioning we were being put in, and we were going to be making a lot of money.
Yeah. And regardless of contracts or whatnot, Martel's always held true that, hey, no matter what, I didn't tell people what I made, right? I didn't talk about that stuff. There's no way Zeke would have known. It's, you know, it is what it is. It's part of wrestling, right? This is not a new thing. Whatever, this has always been a part of wrestling. It is kind of a shame with the timing, because right, they were on the brink, but I guess there is that blessing in disguise bit, right? What had happened if it had been a little later, when they really were, you know, on top of the world, tag champs, and if Zeke had had that, it might have been even more of a mess. So I mean, you know, the timing, I guess, was the best possible scenario.
Just to show, I mean, the follow-up of that angle where they say that Zink was done and injured, and they put Tito with Rick, and they formed a strike force. Yeah. I mean, Tito was already a known commodity in characters, had done the run there as the IC champion, and they click right away. They were friends from before. They had teamed a few times in the AWA, I believe. And you know, they felt very comfortable together. They're very good friends. They, you know, he's one of the few people that Rick would still speak to at times in the business, like Tony Guerrero, both of which are going to be at the big event. So that's going to be quite the reunion for everybody there. I mean, Strikeforce, I mean, obviously Tito being older, I mean, it was not the arch rub as much as with Zinc, but they I believe they had a great run. They beat the Hart Foundation for the title. They had a great run up until Demolition, and even their breakup after that, the following year with the Brainbusters. That's all great stuff that people remember. I mean, Rick always says, you know, there was never any issue between me and Tito. They were both veterans. They knew the game. They meshed very well together, and it is important, especially in those days, if you know, if you can stand your tag team partner, or if there was issue with your tag team partner, you guys were married together, traveling on the road together, so it's like it's worse than being married. So it has to work. It has to be a team effort, and with Tito, it was a good match, and they had a great run, and people still remember it.
Yeah, in retrospect, it worked out probably for the best. Martel and Zink, they had a great fire, right, and a great energy, and maybe Strikeforce didn't quite have that same level because of the youthfulness of Zink, maybe. But it, like you said, it was a little more grounded. Two very experienced guys that were still, you know, young in their careers for the most part. Trusted each other, knew each other, worked well together, complimented each other well. And there was an excitement about Zink and Martel, but if you look at it objectively, Martel and Santana probably meshed and worked better together.
There was a better connection there, and they made the best out of their run.
Yeah, and it was a great run, like you said. I mean, you know, winning the tag titles. Everybody remembers the big match with Demolition where they lost the titles, you know, with getting hit by the cane. And of course, then that happening, started, you know, from that point forward, as we're moving towards Martel turning heel. They lose him. Martel's taken off TV at some point, is injured. But he's actually, right, he has a sick wife that he's, right, that's part of the equation at the time, correct?
Yeah, he had to take care of his wife at the time. It's a forced break. Obviously, you know, we've talked about the grind. The grind is so intense There's no other way to do that than to take time off. If not, you cannot pull that off. So
yeah,
that's what he did. And but when he came back, he had in his mind that he wanted to come back as a heel.
Yeah,
And obviously, I mean, it's like Steamboat. They were fighting with him on that, and to a point where it was like, well, if you're not going to make me a heel, I'm not going to come back.
Yeah. Okay. So here, real quick, talk to me, because this is what I wanted to know. So coming back after this break, right, where he, you know, again, he needed it for his wife, but it was a good time, a good timing for this break, in the scheme of things. So Martel wanted, he was the one pitching to come back as a heel.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. What? Why is that, you think? Because Martel had always been that white meat baby face, yeah, and everything else. Right. What is it at this time that Rick Martel's thinking, I want to be a heel?
Who was the champion?
Okay. There you go. Okay.
With who are you going to make the biggest money?
There you go, right? Okay, so Martel's thinking, hey, I'm sure in his mind he's thinking, I'm not going to win the title, but I could get a run, and I could get those main event matches and make that main event money.
Because, again, it's hard to imagine now, especially when you hear about those guaranteed contracts in the millions. They, you know, the more dates you work, the more money you made, and the better your position on the card, the bigger was your check.
Yeah.
So obviously, if you're middle of the card as a babyface or as a tag team, you're not making the main event money of the guy on the house show working with Hulk Hogan.
That's right. Everybody wanted to be on Hogan's show, right? And right, all these heels.
It is business.
It is, right? And what, man, that is incredible thinking. And obviously, though, right, it absolutely time-wise worked and fit. Because they bring Martel back, he works some singles matches, then he starts teaming with Tito a little bit, and then at WrestleMania 5, they face the Brainbusters, right? There's the inadvertent hit from Santana. Martel walks off. He cuts that promo afterwards, and there we are. We're off to the races. It was perfect timing and worked out perfectly.
Oh, yeah. And you know, there's like that evolution of the model that he started with the baby blue powder look and moves to the pink and then the purple. And then, you know, the look evolved to the look with Tatanka. In that time period, the look keeps evolving, and the vignettes also. He's pulling out those WWF classic vignettes, him on a horse, him playing tennis, him on the pool side with the captain's hat and the pipes, and he's doing all those model thing. And it's working. People remember it to this day very vividly. And they didn't think he could pull it off. But, you know, with his look and the arrogance.
Yeah.
You know, adding the spray and all of that. I mean, at some point, they even, you know, they took Slick away because he didn't need him.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, it's funny, right? Because once upon a time, WWE's thinking, this guy has a French accent. That's not good. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
Now he's a heel, he's a model, and suddenly that French accent is fitting and working for him.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. And again, like you said, right, he has Slick for a while. Didn't, I mean, right, Slick, I mean, I love Slick, but it's not bringing anything to the Martel table. He doesn't need Slick. And when he's on his own, it works, right? Suddenly with the accents part of the package. And, you know, and yeah, and you have this gimmick that on paper, or if you look at it, looks right silly. He's a model, right? And you think, oh gosh, it's another WWE gimmick. But Martel got so into it, so committed to it, he made it so memorable, and made it work.
And the office got behind it fairly quickly. I mean, that original arrogance bottle, the big one, he still has that at home, by the way. That was made by a prop house on Broadway. Oh. So, I mean, by WWE custom made. WWF has the other one. They had a smaller one that's still with them in Stamford. They lended it to the museum in Quebec City when they had a big exposition about pro wrestling.
Yeah.
But that original bottle, I mean, got broken when the Hall of Fame in New York moved to Texas.
Oh, yeah.
When Rick finally got back the bottle, it was broken. Huh. But he found someone that could repair it. So it's repaired and it's displayed at home proudly. And then, you know, but those were very hard to work with because they're very fragile. Mm-hmm. And they you know, if you want to use that during a match, it's almost impossible. So yeah. he had those atomizer done, you know, like the bug spray.
Yeah.
And that's what people remember now.
It is.
And actually found, I mean, he thought he had given or thrown away every of them, but he actually found one when he moved. Oh. So that's also displayed at home. And was displayed at the museum. So it's a very cool gimmick when you think back, because he had the technical knowledge and the wrestling to back it up, and he had always been very popular with the lady.
So yeah,
it was not something made up completely that he was a beautiful man.
No,
and that people thought that he looked like a model.
Absolutely.
So he just didn't look like a model. It's yes, I am a model.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you look at Rick Martel and you think model. Okay. Yeah. I can see this guy modeling and doing it right. I mean, he had the physique, the tan, the hair. I mean, which.
Yeah. He went all the way, you know, with the look and the clothes. I mean, the, you know, check the interviews that he did on from Brother Love to, the vignettes. I mean, there's always a new outfit and a new look, a new hat, a new accessoire. And you know, so he really committed to it and put a lot of time on it and made it work to beyond anyone's expectation.
Absolutely.
And it's hard for a babyface for life character to sell that to the office, but he was committed to it and he wanted to push for it. So, yeah. And it worked.
And it's what everybody remembers, right? Anytime a Rick Martel figure is made, no matter who it's by, right? Whether it's an independent company, whether it's a WWE, over the years, it's the model. That's what people remember.
Yeah. And he's pushing for AWA Rick Martel somewhere down the line.
Oh, I wish.
With one of them, you know, he would love that, because for him, being the world champion is so much more than the gimmick of the model.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's pure wrestling, if you will, for him to be put in that position by a promoter. And he has very fond memory of his AWA day and living in Minneapolis and all of that. So he would love to see a Rick Martel AWA world champion figure.
I
love that. So we're kind of pushing and all those companies to think about it.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's the other part that was very cool. And, you know, I kept receiving the offers and he kept saying no and all that. And when we finally were able to put one deal together, then another deal came together. And Rick saw the potential of a lot of love by the fan. He's very happy with the final product and that people are happy with them. They're actually going to have a brand new exclusive big event variant of the Big Rubber Guy. Purple outfit that's going to be available for the first time ever at Big Event. So
yeah, it's very cool. So there's so many of these guys that have that thinking of you know, that was years ago. People don't, you know, they it's like they don't remember. People don't remember what I did. And this man, wrestling fans don't forget.
Yeah, and Rick is disconnected from the internet almost completely,
yeah.
Outside of the Twitter account that is being active, and that's about it. And outside of that, I mean, he doesn't keep track, and it's most of the time inactive. So it's hard, and I try to explain to him, I mean, if you don't take care of it, I mean, other people are going to do things with it, and you want your daughter to be able to own the model character one day.
Sure.
And you want that to be in good hand, and you want to keep a value to it. So it's been a battle at time, because you know, contrary to a lot of his contemporary, I mean, he did invest his money well. He took care of it. He made it made more money. And today is he sold all of his businesses and all of his buildings, and he's well off in his retirement, and he doesn't need extra income. So he's you know, he after he retired, they adopted a little girl. Him and his wife. So the past 20 some years, that has been the main focus of his life, is to raise that little girl. So he did slowly disconnected from wrestling. You know, the bug is, you know, the bug is there. So I'm very hopeful that, you know, since he's still, you know, in shape, and he like that the experience over the weekend at Big Event is gonna get the bug again to do a few more things before, you know, it's no longer an option. Because, you know, at 70 years old, I mean, traveling is no fun. Sure. It's no fun at 50. So imagine at 70. So all of that plays into it. You know, he lives in Quebec City, and long travel, and you know, so I mean, he's traveling there with his wife, and me, and his sister-in-law. So it's fun for him now to think about it, and all of his friends that he hasn't seen in 10 years and more are going to be there. So hopefully, you know, he'll be interested in doing a few more in there. They're going to be very rare, that's for sure. But you know, I'm hopeful that he's going to do a few more, pretty much like when Pat Patterson, the book came out, and, you know, we kept getting offers, and, you know, to promote the book, he decided to say yes, and he did one, and he liked it, and then he was like, well, you know, what else am I going to do? And then we ended up going to England and doing the Jericho cruise and doing this and doing that. So that's all a lot of fun for me to be there and help them, and also for them to, whoa, people also really like me, you know, and they remember me, and all of that. So it's been quite an adventure. And you know, I spoke to him last weekend, actually. Yeah. Last Saturday, he called me, wanted to make sure everything was in place for Big Event, and everything was going, and going over our plan again for traveling and all that. So that's gonna happen this time. He's gonna be there.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's very exciting. I mean, I still get excited. You know, I went to Quebec City twice last year for wrestling work, and both times I went to breakfast the following day with him.
Yes.
And it still blows my mind. So, I mean, I cannot imagine being a Rick Martel fan and not being able to meet him or see him ever. And then, you know, that it's finally going to happen at Big Event. I think the last official appearance he was booked was way back in like 2018 or something like that, and he canceled WrestleCon in Florida. And then I believe before that, he did the Wrestle Reunion in Toronto. And that was like 2012 or something like that. So it's been more than almost 15 years since he did the full-fledged appearance. He did the Hall of Fame in Amsterdam, which might be considered his last official appearance outside of that.
And again, it's an exciting time, right? Nostalgia is a very hot commodity right now, and so it's a good thing. And as we talk about, right, the end of his career, right, the WWE run, and you know, he did some things, some appearances here and there, that had that WCW run, which essentially kind of marked the major end of his career with that injury.
But I mean, have anyone seen some of those matches he did in WCW recently?
No,
he was blowing the roof of the place.
I loved it.
Amazing matches. I mean, there's a Rick Martel against Eddie Guerrero match out there.
Yep.
I mean, his work was on par with everybody.
Yeah.
It would still work today.
Yeah. I love that run, right? Where he wins the TV title and everything else. It was a great run. And, and obviously got cut short, right? I mean, I think it could have been even more, but you know, he suffers it, but Martel has said, and Don Callis has agreed, right? There was a talk in 1997 of bringing him and Callis into the WWE as a tag team called the Supermodels.
Yeah, that was the plan.
Yeah. And there was a dispute over pay, you know, this and that, whatever. The negotiations didn't work out.
Yeah, it was an issue about who's getting what and how, and getting a guaranteed money.
It's so wild to think of the possibility of Rick Martel and WWE in 1997. I guess they had all this planned out, right, with the teaming, ultimately, yeah. A Callis, you know, Martel turning back face, yeah, and him and Callis. And it's a crazy thing to think in retrospect that we could have had that.
In WWF at the time. And they had agreed that it was going to be guaranteed money.
Yeah.
That's the key point that made the deal fall apart, is because they were going to put him in a tag team with an unknown commodity, they didn't feel comfortable putting him on a big guarantee contract. And that he felt a little bit insulted by that.
Yeah.
So he turned around and, I don't know if he went directly to Bischoff or to his former roommate from Minneapolis, who went by the name of Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
But I do remember that when Hulk Hogan worked Jacques Rougeau in Montreal at the hotel bar after the show, there was one WCW, there was one wrestler that was not from WCW, and it was Rick Martel.
Yeah.
And he was there to speak with Hulk. So, yeah. And the run with the WCW would come after that. So, yeah. He told me personally that WCW deal was the biggest guaranteed money and biggest contract he ever signed in wrestling.
Sure. I would venture to guess, right? I mean, WCW around that time. Yeah.
But I mean, for him, I mean, that was important, that in the way the business was going at that time, that he get guaranteed money. He went and he did it. And I mean, his work in WCW, I mean, outside of getting injured, there's nothing you can say bad about it.
No.
He was as good or better than most of the people on the roster.
Definitely.
And in that time frame of WCW, he was also reliable.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, which is, yeah, that's important. Yeah. And of course, right after the injury, right, he stuck around a little bit from the business as a trainer, did some commentating. Did he host a WCW show in French?
He worked with Marc Blondin in the French commentary for WCW, mainly during his injuries and to end toward the end of the contract. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know, since then he, made a couple of appearances for WWE, just little things, right? Coming in Quebec, getting called out.
He appeared at a house show in Quebec City.
Yeah.
And Brock Lesnar, being a Minnesota guy, you remember Rick at that time, and he was the champion.
Yeah.
He did an appearance for TNA also in Quebec City.
Yeah.
He did a few indie show here and there, getting awards and things like that in the province, in Ontario. But he kept doing less and less, obviously. and I believe the last official appearance is when they were like front row with Tony Garea, and they jumped the barricade to help the baby face.
Yeah.
So, and he still showed a lot of fire on that one.
Absolutely.
The story I'm told is that, he kind of liked it, but and they were maybe talking about him being an agent and all of that, but he didn't want to go back on the road. And Tony was still an agent, I believe, at that time. And he said, well, if you do one thing, they're going to keep putting more things on your plate.
Yeah.
So he wasn't ready to go back on the road and be on the road full time. So that was it. I mean, no matter what Bruce Pritchard said, I mean, he has never been offered a WWE Hall of Fame. And if he's offered a WWE Hall of Fame, I will make sure personally that he accept the offer.
That's unreal, right? Because he should be there. I mean, right? What, three-time tag team champion, the model, one of the most memorable gimmicks in their history.
And they own the AWA library. He was the AWA world champion.
There's
plenty of stuff there. I mean, compared to Coco Beware, nothing against Coco. I love Coco, but
absolutely. Or so the guys,
nobody
that never
can
appeared.
Put his credential against the fact that he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, absolutely. Considering who's on the Hall of Fame list already.
Well,
so, that offer never came. He did turn down a few appearances a long time ago for those WrestleMania Access signing. Mainly the last offer, I believe, was in San Francisco when they did San Francisco. The idea of traveling to sign autograph maybe for a few hours for not a lot of money, and do all that traveling from Quebec City to San Francisco was not a pay, was the big no-no for him. And especially to return and to be asked to just sit around and have no official role or no invitation to the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
You know, he didn't think it was the right timing for him. And once again, I mean, he doesn't need to do those appearances. And sure. That's hard for people in the business to understand that he doesn't need to do that. So,
yeah. Well, and hopefully at some point, right, the stars align, the location.
Well, Demolition is going in this year, so if Demolition's going in, I mean,
there's always
anything hope. Anything can happen.
That's right. And again, hopefully it'll happen while Martel's still able to attend and enjoy.
I mean, hopefully, yeah. I mean, I think that's about where, right in the middle of it should be done in the next few years, because, you know, obviously at 70 years old, he's not getting any younger like any of us.
Yeah. I mean, do it while, let's do it while, while Rick can still attend and enjoy and appreciate the, everything else, because he should be there. Absolutely should be there. But still, it's so odd to me that if you look back, you still get this feeling that within the modern wrestling mentality, that Martel's just is underappreciated, right? He's not spoken of like he should be. And again, right, WWE writes a lot of the history, a lot of
what
they control a lot of the tape libraries.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could, if he was getting the Hall of Fame, I mean, they would put his best foot forward, and I mean, obviously, it wouldn't be hard to find great, amazing footage that they own everything.
They own it, yeah.
From the AWA, WWE, and WCW.
Yep.
And you know, they have Tony Garea and or Tito Santana that can induct him.
Yeah. Sure.
So I think it's a no-brainer to send that invitation, but he's been so reluctant to do any appearances. There's those rumors online that he turned it down and things like that, which is not true. So they have his info, they have his number.
Yep.
They talk to him about royalties at times. It's just for them to realize. I mean, yeah. I mean, Rick Martel is part of their glory days, and the model is one of the most remembered character, and they should celebrate that and hopefully make money with that again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, with the footage, you could do multiple things, right? Because Martel was always relevant in one way or another, whether it was AWA champion, whether it was that short run with the Can-Am connection, whether it was the run with Strike Force, whether it was the model run. I mean, he was always there. He always, quote unquote,
he was always a player. I mean, for a long time, he even had the record for the longest stay in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully, right. I mean, again, everybody's got their opinions on the WWE Hall of Fame and what it is. I understand the concept. I think we just need to seal it, right? They just need to put WrestleMania in Quebec City or in Montreal.
Yeah. The WWE Hall of Fame has his own rules to induct people, but I mean,
Martel deserves it.
Rick Martel as the model. I mean, if he doesn't deserve it, I don't know who does not. You just need to get the invitation. And for the guys, I mean, like him, outside of the business and not doing shows every weekend and all of that, being recognized by WWE means something.
Yeah,
because he was there, he worked for there, he helped build the company to where it was and is. For him, it's a recognition that means something.
Yeah, and is deserved.
And for me, as a fan of Rick Martel, it's like, geez, I want people to see him
say thank you for the great career he has,
sure,
and his great accomplishment, and to thank the people who helped him along the way, and having people smile, and for him to have two beautiful ladies from the WWE roster and the model music and some arrogant spray for one more time. I think that that'd be awesome. Because he's such an incredible character and is also a great human being. So, I mean, he deserved that recognition. So, and he's there. So it's like he's hard to find. So hopefully, you know, that invitation is forthcoming at some point.
Yeah. Again, it needs to be done again while Rick can still enjoy it and attend and get the full effect. So tell us then, obviously you talked about it. You mentioned it, the big event coming up, a very rare Rick Martel appearance. So everybody needs to get there if they want to see Rick Martel, because you never know, right? How many he's going to do. This might be it for a while. So yeah, tell us some details about the big event.
I mean, he's going to do the big event on Saturday, the 21st, March 21st. And he's going to be there all day. We're doing signing with Tito Santana, pictures, the whole thing. Tony Guerrero is going to be there as well. So I'm sure there's going to be opportunities for to get the two of them together.
Yeah.
I believe also Demolition is there. So Strike Force Demolition combo. Oh. That sounds like a no-brainer to me.
Sure.
He's very excited, very a little bit nervous about it because, you know, he doesn't quite know what to expect. I think, I keep telling him, you're just going to get a lot of love.
Just wait, yeah.
A lot of love. From there, I think, you know, he's really going to be able to enjoy it completely. And hopefully, you know, he enjoys it so much that he's going to do a few more here and there. But, you know, he's not going to do one every weekend, that's for sure.
Right.
But, he, you know, hopefully he's going to be doing, hopefully, maybe a couple a year. Two a year for the next 2 years, that'd be awesome. But, I mean, again, you know, like Rick likes to tell me all the time, well, let's do this one and see after.
Yeah, and the big event, right? It's in New York, correct?
Yeah, New York, Long Island.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the big outside of the WrestleMania event.
Yeah, this is
with WrestleCon. It's the biggest wrestling convention. Yes. It's twice a year.
Definitely is.
It's been running there for years. I went there twice with Pat Patterson. But they were amazing in the offer they made to Rick and the details they put into the offer to make sure that he was comfortable in doing the trip. So it's going to be an amazing event for fan, and, you know, he's going to take the time and shake hands and be very happy, I think, to meet everybody.
Yeah. So everybody needs to go. I mean, what an opportunity, right? Not only can you meet Rick Martel, but I mean, if you remember Rick Martel with Tony Garea, there you go. Bam. He's there too. So, hey, get that. If you remember Rick Martel with Tito Santana, bam, he's there. Get that. Or if you remember Rick Martel as the model or the AWA days, right? There's just Rick. And then not only that, but if you're a Strike Force guy, Demolition's there, right? Those two go hand in hand. So what an opportunity overall. Not only just Rick being there, that rare opportunity to see Rick, but there's all these other important aspects of Rick's career that will also be there that that if you want to tie in. I mean, it's what an opportunity.
I mean, he's good friend with Don Morocco. They were together at WrestleMania with the Can-Am Connection and Bob Arthur.
And they
had a small run as for the IC belt with Don Morocco. He was good friend with Don Morocco going back to Hawaii. If you remember Tommy Rich, I mean, actually, Tommy Rich and Rick Martel are going to be shaking hands for the first time in like 40-some years.
Unbelievable.
As they haven't probably seen each other because they never worked together again after that run in Georgia. There's a lot of amazing opportunity there at the big event. And we did a private signing a few years back at his home, where the promoter sent us merchandise and everything. And he loved doing that. He loved seeing the action figures and the different things that people had. So to be able to shake hands and share their memories with them, I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Like I said, I mean, I, you know, there's that saying that you should never meet your hero, but I no. did meet mine, and I was not, it was not a deception. It was beyond my wildest expectations. Sure. So,
to the level that you're working with him, right? So,
yeah, correct. So, yeah. I mean, it's, I mean, you're not, he's not going to let you down if you come to the big event. That's for sure. Yeah.
And Martel, this unbelievable, right? I'm talking about the merchandise, the action figure, right? This guy has so many, right? The Remco. He all the way goes all the way back to the Ribco Rick Martel, the Hasbro, the LJN Strike Force Rick Martel, and of course all the modern with the independent companies, right? The big rubber guys and everything else.
Yeah, there's so even much as stuff out a there. Mattel in the first run of Mattel, he was there.
So it's so many different versions and eras in the action figures. Pretty cool. One of the just a testament to his longevity. And how he always found a way to tweak himself and stay prominent. Now, I do have to, as we close up here, Bertrand, I do have to ask, right? You have this great body of work as a writer. You're obviously, your focus is that eastern part of Canada, right? The Montreal, the Quebec, that area. Is there, and again, if you can't say anything, go. I understand, but is there ever the opportunity that we will see Bertrand write a biography about Rick Martel?
I mean, I would love to. I've pitched the idea to him quite a few times. He's never been too interested, and he doesn't feel that there's much to tell and things of that nature. So it's always a challenge to maybe, you know, push him in that direction. Maybe one day. So, you know, hopefully people at the big event will say, write a book, put the seeds in there. I would love to. And obviously, I mean, if there's ever a Rick Martel book, I'm going to be the one behind it.
Yeah, I hope so.
And I mean, he has quite a few stories. I'm sure if I start digging with him, we would find more. Sure. He's a great personality, great person. And people, but he's also a very private person. And you know, it is what it is. I think that's part of the charm as well.
Yeah. Well, I still think a book can be done.
I will never give up on that idea.
Good.
Because, you know, I'm sure we would be able to get a publisher, and I'm also sure, you know, that would be right my alley. So doing those projects like I did with Pat Patterson, and I also did it in French with Marc Blondin for his own biography, the French commentator in Montreal.
Yep.
To write the project with someone that is alive and write it as if they were the one writing it.
Yeah,
I love doing those. Those are a great experience to dig, you know, behind the character and get to the real person. I think that there's something there, but obviously, I mean, I cannot twist his arm. He's still stronger than me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I hope so, right? Because I think he could still, there could still be that line where there's certain parts of his life he could keep private. And if he just, even if he just keeps it to the business stories and right. And there's enough there with his, yeah, length of his career, still enough there to make a great book. And wrestling is one of those great, whatever forms of entertainment where books are still so appreciated and so prominent and important. So yeah, hopefully at some point you'll be successful. But again, Bertrand, this was great talking to you. And it's great talking about Martel. I've always, like I said, always been a huge Martel fan. With his birthday, I thought, oh, you know what? I'd love to talk about. I'm always could talk about Martel, but it's perfect timing. Let's do it. I knew you were the guy to talk to. Not only did you have the relationship with him, but you're from that area. You're the expert on that area and that wrestling. Just perfect. It was so nice to talk to you and talk about Martel. I so appreciate everything you've done with him to get him to go out and do this event and with the, you know, the Twitter and encouraging him to be more active, because you know, I think it's important, right? He has a brand that he can establish and whatever that could help, again, help his daughter. And in the future, and it's a commodity. Yes. And
It's at Rick Martel 2021. And you know, he you know, I get him to release a few pictures here and there from different eras of his career. And So, you know, and when we promote, obviously, I mean, all these activities now with the big event. I mean, I mean, funny story, okay? So he filmed the video for the big event. I believe you must have seen it.
I did, yeah.
So I'm posting that videos everywhere, and yeah. And like Facebook is asking me if I created the video to artificial intelligence because nobody has seen Rick Martel in so long.
Yeah.
Seriously, I was asked to see if I should mark this video as being AI.
Yeah.
So that's how long it has been. So you know, so that's a lot of fun. I mean, he you know, with him moving to a new place, he started digging into some of his pictures and all of that. So we discovered quite a few things like that.
Yeah.
I was able to find gentlemen in Winnipeg who had a lot of pictures from the AWA days.
Oh.
We got a lot of that as well. Speaking of unknown tag team, and there was an amazing 8x10 that I couldn't part with without getting it. Was him teaming with Wahoo McDaniel in Winnipeg for the great. AWA, you know? So yeah. It's like, what about a tag team you didn't expect existed?
That's right.
So it's there's so much stuff like that that I would like to discover with a book or release through his little appearance here and there for social media.
Yeah.
But it is an honor to guide him in there and make sure everything goes well and there's no issue, and that, you know, at, you know, that we curate the model and the Rick Martel legacy as much as possible, and that he takes an active part in it in helping release some action figures and all of that. So
absolutely,
it's an amazing honor.
It's right, a good time to be a Martel fan as some of this stuff comes out. Bertrand, always tell Rick, first of all, tell Rick Martel hi for me, and always tell him that I know he's private. I know he keeps to himself. He doesn't want to talk. But if Rick Martel ever feels like talking just for an hour, I'm the guy.
Yeah.
Tell him to come talk to Dave. And that's a bucket list.
I have a list of guys.
I bet. Put me on the list because that is a dream. That would be a dream. He is absolutely
right. I know. That's going to be the hardest.
I bet, but
you know, he doesn't not, you know, it's an issue even with doing a French one. So,
sure.
So hopefully, I mean, big event, you know, let's all cross our fingers. He's going to get the bug again and, you know, he's going to be open to doing more.
Never say never.
Never say never.
That's right. It's a wrestling business. You never say never. So again, Bertrand, thank you for talking with me. Thank you for everything you're doing to help encourage Rick, to you know, to get out there a little bit and give us fans, you know, let us show our love for him, because that's what it's about, right? It's obviously about him remembering and enjoying what he's accomplished with his career, but it's also these opportunities like the big event and everything for us to show our love and our appreciation to him for his career. And that's one of the best things about wrestling, are those chances to do that. So I have no doubts he'll get a lot of love, and I hope he receives that well. And maybe it'll, you know, spark a little fire to do a little more. And obviously keep that balance in his life. I understand he's private. He's, in, you know, enjoying his retirement and his time. But, you know, hopefully he can find a good balance of to get to a little of both. So, but thank you for your time, Bertrand. And again,
my
I know
pleasure.
It was so nice to talk to you. I always lean on you for, you know, as the expert in that area. And that includes Rick Martel. So thank you for your time. Thank you for talking to us. Again, if you talk to Rick soon, tell him hi and tell him happy birthday. For Dave Dynasty and all of our listeners.
I will be speaking to him on his birthday for sure.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle, all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course, all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
All right, and thank you to Bertrand for coming on. I will more than likely have him back on the show at some point to discuss some of his specialties based in Montreal Pro Wrestling. All right, guys, make sure you go out, check out Bertrand's books, purchase all those. They're all on Amazon. Just look up his name. You'll find them all there. I highly recommend them. I own them all, and I highly recommend you go out and get your copies. Also, make sure you follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much all of the platforms. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty, and you can typically find me pretty easily. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my various podcasts and projects. Go check out all of the WrestleCopia Network podcasts. You can find the individual shows on your favorite podcast platforms by name, or you can visit WrestleCopia.com as your central hub to this great family of podcasts. Also, make sure you check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Lots of great wrestling content, lots of great programs, segments, specials, everything that you have not seen at a very affordable rate. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account and then download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your smart devices. Okay, guys, as I'm recording, I have not yet completed the interview for the episode after this one. However, it is on the schedule. It will happen. I feel very strongly about this. But this is an interview that I have been working for a long time. I mean, we're up at least a year, at least. Been working to get this scheduled. Now, this is a very unique wrestling interview. I'm not going to say anymore. It's very unique, very one of a kind. I dare say that in this context of professional wrestling, this interview has never been done before. I know. I've got everybody's like, what are you talking about, Dave? You'll see. You'll see when I announce this very shortly after the release of this episode. Again, follow me on social media so that you can be the first to see this. This is going to be a very fun interview, a very fun episode coming up, and I can't wait for you guys to hear it. That is next episode, though. Once again, thank you to everyone for tuning into this episode. Make sure you subscribe to us so that you do not ever miss an episode of Wrestling Nostalgia. All right, guys, thank you once again, and always remember, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we've brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.